The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is historian Paula Fass of the University of California at Berkeley, historian of children's lives and author of the book Inheriting the Holocaust. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@Yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reform Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reform congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's fully spring now here in Tucson, southern Arizona, where I live, which means everything is growing and blooming and the days are warm and lush. That must mean Passover's on the way, the Chag Ha'aviv, the springtime festival of freedom, and it is. The first Seder for Pesach is a week from tomorrow night, Monday, April 18th. According to surveys, the most observed single Jewish experience in America is actually the Passover Seder, the ordered freedom meal that teaches the lesson of our redemption from slavery in Egypt more than 3,200 years ago. 75% or so of American Jews attend a Seder or Passover meal of some type, and many, many non-Jews join them, following the general Talmudic principles stated in the Seder, Kol dichvin yeitei v'yechol, let all who are hungry come and eat, and eat we shall. But there is much, much more to Passover than matzo ball soup, tasty as it is, or gefilte fish, or roast chicken, or brisket, or kugel. For Pesach is among the most thematic of all Jewish festivals, and its central idea of freedom from slavery, of escaping unethical control and asserting human dignity and free will, is central to our very humanity. At the Passover Seder, the remarkable structured experience of celebrating freedom in food, we read and chant from the Haggadah. Literally translated, that means the telling or the story. And the Haggadah, the text we use to tell this great freedom story, is a remarkable creation in and of itself. In whatever version of the Haggadah you use, I myself have a collection of about 100 different Haggadot from around the world and throughout history, not counting the one I edited that others use, we have a multidimensional teaching tool that manages to convey the meaning of freedom through words, songs, stories, games, numbers, mnemonics, taste, sound, smell, touch, and action. It is a beautiful and powerful tool to teach us what freedom meant to our ancestors and to compel us to search out and understand what it means to us today. What a fabulous opportunity to enjoy learning in a new and different way. What an extraordinary chance to revel in the great gift of freedom. Anticipating the Zman Cherutenu, the Festival of Freedom, and to play us in this morning, from our pre-Pesach preview of preliminary Passover music, here's cantor Alberto Mizrahi singing Ki Lo Na'eh Adir Bimlucha from the Passover Seder songs.
Adir bimlucha, bachur kalocha, zuna miyamru loyle, kore, 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 kugine, kore, kofle, kore, kofle, kore, kova, doi shema, mamro, kilo noi, kilo yove. Kilo yove, 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 kilo yove. Kilo yove, kilo yove, kilo yove, kilo yove, kilo yove.
That was Kilo Na'e for Passover, beginning in just a week and a day. Time to prepare, time to get ready to enjoy the great celebration of freedom that's coming up fast. If you haven't done it yet, make your Seder arrangements today. When we return on To Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Professor Paula Fass, who more or less invented the entire area of the history of children. She's a professor at Berkeley and the author of the excellent new book, Inheriting the Holocaust. Find out why the history of children is so difficult to write and why it's so important when we come back on To Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, most of the time I'm talking about the great pizza we serve at Mama's, but not today. Nope. Today I want to tell you about our calzones. A calzone is kind of like a stuffed pizza. It's made of dough wrapped around whatever ingredients you want, like pepperoni, mushrooms, or even artichoke hearts. There's lots of cheese inside, and it's served with a cup of marinara sauce. Our calzones are huge. We had a guy order two of them over the phone, and when he picked them up, he couldn't believe it. There were only two people eating, and two large calzones feed 6 to 8 people easy. You know, it wouldn't hurt you to try a calzone next time you're in. Then, if they get real popular, we might have to change our name to Mama's Calzones. Nah. Mama's Pizza, 4500 East Speedway in the Midway Business Park, on the east side of 22nd and Colb and back of the Fry Shopping Center, on the north side at the southwest corner of Oracle and McGee, and on newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through 8th grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum with a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with award-winning sports programs. THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, and respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. They're enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll your child or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888. That's THA at 529-3888 or visit thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning, Paula Fass. Paula is the Margaret Byrne Professor of History at UC Berkeley and Distinguished Scholar in Residence at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, where my mom grew up, actually. Apropos of nothing, a social and cultural historian, she has recently been active in developing the field of children's history, has worked to make this an interdisciplinary field with a global perspective. She got her undergraduate degree from Barnard College, master's and PhD from Columbia. She hung around Columbia a long time. How did your parents feel about that?
They liked that. I stayed at Columbia precisely because my parents were in New York.
See? You were being a good child even then. You were moving.
I was always a good child, but that's heavily came out of the experience that I had as a child and trying to compensate my parents for the experiences that they had had. I think this is a very common among second-generation Holocaust survivors that they know so much about the agony that their parents went through and the losses, and so they try to be perfect. Possibly too perfect.
You know, all of the second generation and now third and sometimes fourth generation groups that I've either sung at or spoken to, it's amazing how many very high achievers there are who are also a little tightly wound.
I think you've got it just right. There is a cost. Many of these are extremely successful individuals, but they also live with a knowledge that others don't live with. They grew up with a certain kind of both darkness and understanding of the past and enormous requirements about the future.
I should mention that your most recent book is called Inheriting the Holocaust, a Second Generation Memoir. As a children's historian, did you see this as sort of a combination of your own child's history, or was it just came out as a memoir?
That's an excellent question, because I did realize at a certain point, especially after I had written a book called Kidnapped, Child Abduction in America, which is about the loss of children, that I have been all my life haunted by the loss of my parents, between them five children, in Auschwitz and Chelmno, and that my being drawn to issues of children and various problems related to children historically, and this had not existed really as a field before people like I began to plow it, was deeply related to my parents' experience and my understanding that I needed to, in a sense, dig out these children from my parents' past that I was really never told about as a child. I mean, I knew that they had had children. I knew they had been taken away. It was one of the first things I remember as a little girl. But I didn't know their names. I didn't really know their ages. All of that was very confusing. And in a sense, it was after writing that book that I said I was now ready to write about my family.
Extraordinary story. We will continue speaking much more with Paula Fass about all of her work in the history of children and as a second-generation survivor when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated said recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grand, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Passover is coming up fast, so why is this night different from all other nights? Because you can spend it with Rabbi Sam Kohan, enjoying a Seder in a way that makes Passover live and breathe as never before, for every age. And this year, it's part of the 100th anniversary of Temple Emmanuel, which makes this an even more extraordinary night. To truly experience this great festival of freedom, join Rabbi Sam Kohan for a second night Passover Seder that's simply the finest in Southern Arizona. This celebration is on Tuesday night, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Reservations are a must. Call 520-327-4501. The food is great and kosher, but it's the stories, songs, and spirit of Rabbi Kohan that make this a Seder you'll never forget. Learn, enjoy, laugh, cry, and eat well. Call 327-4501 to make your reservation now for Tuesday, April 19th, a memorable second night of Passover with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or, if you live on the northwest side of Tucson, there'll also be a second night Seder in the northwest with Rabbi Jason Holtz. Call 327-4501 for more information.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com. Call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. Pesach is coming in really soon, a week from tomorrow night, actually, and we'll have 7 or 8 days of, well, matzah. Well, to get us ready for this bread of affliction. Boy, I like Passover and the concept of freedom, but boy, I don't like matzah. You can have mine. Here's the delightful Eric Schwartz and his hip-hop cut, Matzah.
I feel like a freak, because every time I pull out something to eat, for this week, I can't do this, because I'm Jewish, and I can't eat bread. Yeah, my rabbi said only matzah. Any way you want to eat it, cold or hot, it's matzah. Fun for your mother, brother, sister, father, matzah. Buy in bulk for a lower cost per box, it's matzah, 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 matzah. Hanukkah, no, that's over, so you don't get passed over, get your over to my pad is Passover. I'm the mad flow, a smoothie, and I hope you understand it. If you want the story of Passover, rent the Ten Commandments starring Charlton Heston. But I got a question about the bread that is unleavened, causing indigestion, called matzah. Eat it for a week, we got stuff. No bread, no pasta. Best believe a Jew is stopped up. Now Moses made the matzah when he was fleeing Egypt. Had no time for bread to rise, he said, I just leave it. We can eat it like this, feed it to the Hebrews. But little did he know that the weight would end up equal. Cause
let my people go.
Became the anthem, get your damn hands up, maybe it will help you pass some. How could one bread rock is so famous when the taste is the same flavor of the box it came in? Matzah. Eat it at once, ain't no second guessing.
Matzah.
Leaving crumbs on my lap and chest, and it's called
matzah.
I found the avicomin in my small intestine.
Matzah, 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 matzah.
Now if you never had matzah, maybe you should try it. Be careful, protein junkies, don't mess up your Atkins diet. People laugh when my sandwich cracks, it ain't never quiet. The best place to enjoy matzah is in private. You eating tuna on matzah? No way you're looking cool. It's been 3 days since I dropped the kids off at Hebrew school. I like my matzah sweet with butter and jam on it. But please, out of respect, just don't put ham on it. Don't be scared of the matzah. Nothing could be safer. Just think of it as a super-sized communion wafer. We'll trade you the matzah for candy this Easter. Wait, for some reason we can't have corn sweetener either. So go ahead and eat it, whether Jewish or secular. And if you need it, a smoothie will keep you regular. You never heard a Jew like this, I surprise ya. The bread might be flat, but this song is a riser.
Matzah.
When I munch, I love the crunch of
matzah.
I love it a bunch, wash it down with punch.
Matzah.
What's for lunch? I got a hunch, it's
matzah, 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 matzah.
That was brilliant, son. Hip-hop's William Hung. Log me on suburbanhomeboy.com. Boy is yo backwards.
Eric Schwartz's fun song, Matzah, for Pesach, coming up next week. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Good morning, Guy. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Pesach's coming up, just 8 or 9 more shopping days until Passover and cooking and cleaning days. Pesach is wonderful everywhere in the Jewish world, but particularly so in Israel. Maybe you could share a story about an Israeli Pesach experience.
Certainly. I would like to share with you a story that comes from my kid's kindergarten. My kid went to a kindergarten at a nearby kibbutz in Ramat HaShofet in Israel. And every Passover, all the kids of the kindergarten were requested to come to school with long white shirts that they took from their daddies and to bring a long stick. And they were doing sort of exodus.
So the kids did the exodus. They relived it.
Exodus. They're reliving the exodus. They are walking outside of the kibbutz into a nearby valley. Some of the parents are wearing costumes of Egyptians, pharaohs, and are running after them and stuff. And all the kids are going to a nearby stream. They take this stick. They hit on the stream as Moses did to cross the ocean. Then they cross the stream. And on the other side of the stream, they're making pita bread over open fire. But it's not actually pitas. It's actually the matzahs. They're bringing the flour with them. They're taking water. They're mixing flour and water and very quickly putting this newly made dough on a metal, it's called a sudge. It's a metal tool that you put on open fire and they make the original matzahs.
The real matzah.
And of course, after that, they take chocolate or peanut butter or whatever and put on top and then they eat it. But it's really a great experience that really gives those kids the taste and the feeling of doing an exodus. And then they sit down in a circle and the teacher teaches them the story of Exodus. So it's a really different but very lovely way to celebrate Passover.
You know, it's terrific. In the Seder it says Behold Avodah Chayav Adam Lirot Atatzmo Keilu Hu Yatzo Mitzrayim. Every generation, each of us is supposed to see ourselves as though we personally had come out of Egypt. So this is a way to really personally feel it for kids.
Definitely. And at the end of the day, I think the fact that we in Israel and the Jewish people here in the United States have their freedom is the biggest symbol of getting out of Egypt, because we have freedom. That's not something that we should take for granted.
It's wonderful. You know, in our congregation, we actually do a Passover experience not too different in the wilderness. We go walk out and we do it on a Shabbat, Erev Shabbat, to capture a little, on Pesach, to capture some of that same flavor. It's a great holiday and a fun way to describe it. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant, the J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, who was just again named a semifinalist for the National James Beard Award for Chef of the Year.
That's right. Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Good morning and mazel tov. What's cooking at Janos now?
Well, all sorts of fun things. It's springtime, so this is when my restaurants come into their own, when we get all the new flavors from the gardeners, from baby beets to little peas to citrus. Wonderful things for us to cook with. The menus are light. They're fun. We're doing our 10 terrific taste menu year-round now at Janos, which is actually a misnomer. It's 12 different things over 4 courses. Lots of little mouthfuls of great tastes.
You know, my wife Wendy calls your food magic food.
That's so nice of her to say that. If I cook magic food, the place I do it is at Janos. That's where we pull out all the stops, and that's where it's really, that's the height of the cooking that I do.
What's the phone number for Janos?
615-6100.
Or www.janos.com. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel.
Join in a fabulous Mamuna Moroccan festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. This year, we've added a fantastic drumming circle and the chance to learn how to belly dance, too. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of delicious and exotic non-Passover treats. Join Israeli Moroccan star Aznet and Rabbi Sam Kohan for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mamuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mamuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend for free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mamuna Festival and Concert, Tuesday, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, we were talking about pilgrimage sites a little bit. You come back from a trip recently, again, and one of the really odd new phenomena in the Jewish tourist world are not only travel to Israel or go visit the site where your grandparents grew up or Holocaust places or other Jewish communities, but there's this sort of Orthodox element of pilgrimage, and perhaps the most interesting and weirdest of those places is Uman. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, it is, in fact, the group I met in Marrakesh who put Uman on the map, as it were, and they made clear to the locals that the locals could improve their economic well-being if they had kosher restaurants, kosher hotels, a mikveh, a functioning synagogue, et cetera, et cetera. And at this point, this group alone brings between 2,000 and 3,000 people every year for the high holidays to Uman, which leaves behind enough money to feed the town of Uman for the rest of the year. I mean, I have no idea how many other people go to Uman or how many Jews go there the rest of the year, but from looking at these guys' lifestyle and the amount of money they spent in Marrakesh, even without any food buying. And I know that in Uman, there are now several five-star hotels in this little formerly, you know, muddy village without plumbing and pavements in the middle of Ukraine. There are five-star hotels and a mikveh and kosher restaurants and the works, suitable to Jews from Miami and New York and whatever who like to travel in the lifestyle to which they've become accustomed.
Now, Uman was the birthplace of Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav, one of the most famous and oddest Jewish mystics. His stories are fascinating, not the simple, fun Hasidic stories. They're really quite deep and strange. That's become the Bratslav or Hasidim. Are these people Bratslavers, or are they just kind of added this element to their own experiences?
No, my guys were Lubavitchers.
Fascinating.
And most of them were Balei Tshuva.
Right.
There was one guy who was like sort of the captain of the team who told me this great story that his parents were like third or fourth generation Lubavitchers. And his mother had a series of daughters.
Chabad Lubavitch, for those people who don't know, Chabad, the largest movement of Hasidim in the world.
Right.
And very dynamic movement.
And very sort of open and inclusive and welcoming and non-judgmental. And anyway, this guy's mother had at some point a terrible miscarriage. And all the doctors advised her that she needed to have an operation which would render her incapable of having more children. So she went to the Rebbe and said, "Should I get this operation?" And the Rebbe said, "No, Hashem wants you to have a son. And if you get this operation, you'll be thwarting his will." So she didn't get the operation. And she proceeded to give birth to the guy who was telling me this story.
Hmm.
who is the guy who, you know, obviously fortune has smiled upon him, and he runs this huge company and has all these nursing homes and does all these mitzvahs and takes people on pilgrimages and is a very nice, very easy to talk with guy. And every one of these people had a story about the Rebbe and some personal, you know, turning point in their lives where the Rebbe kind of proved himself in one way or another.
Wow. Fascinating stuff, and definitely a little different kind of tourism, too. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service just in time for Pesach, a week from tomorrow night. A blind man is sitting on a park bench during Pesach. A rabbi sits down next to him and takes out his Pesachdik lunch for Passover and starts eating. He sees the blind man has nothing to eat, and he takes pity on him, so he takes a piece of matzah and gives it to him. A few minutes later, the blind man turns, taps the rabbi on the shoulder, and asks, "Who wrote this garbage?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. Sorry about that joke. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Achrei Mot near the midpoint of the book of Leviticus, Vayikra. Leviticus is centered on the question of how we create holiness in our lives. Achrei Mot addresses the issue in a variety of ways. It begins with words that are poignant without being revealing. After the death of Aaron's two sons, referring to Nadav and Avihu, the two young priests who died in the Torah portion of Shmini for offering strange and inappropriate fire to the Lord. Aaron is enjoined to be cautious and scrupulous in all his observances, lest he incur a similar punishment to that of his sons. Our portion then moves to the rituals related to the great and powerful Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, holiest day of the whole year for our ancestors, as it remains for us. We are commanded to afflict our souls on that day, Ta'anu et Nafshotechem. The rites described in Achrei Mot are very detailed and formed the basis for the ways in which our ancestors observed the Day of Atonement throughout the period when the temple stood in Jerusalem. The high priest purified himself completely, the Kohen Gadol did, then offered sacrifices of atonement for himself, then for his family, and finally for his people. He would then purify the holiest parts of the shrine of the temple and bring forward a goat as an atonement offering. That goat is one of the peculiarities of this ritual sequence. Actually, two goats were brought out. One, the scapegoat, this portion is the origin of that concept and that term, is given the burden of symbolically carrying the sins of the people out into the wilderness. It is not killed. The second is sacrificed as an atonement offering on the altar. Ultimately, after a full day of self-denial and repentance, Ki vayom hazeh chaper aleichem letaher etchem b'chol chatotechem, on that day atonement shall be made for you to purify you from all your sins. Through this process, the people, all of us, were returned to holiness. Much of the rest of the portion of Achrei Mot reflects the ways in which we then fail to remain holy and establishes rules to try to keep us on the straight and narrow. We are not to practice idolatry, not to engage in blood sport, not to eat carrion, and so on. Each prohibition is another way of structuring holiness into our own lives, keeping us from engaging in unholy behavior. Finally, Achrei Mot is interested in the question of establishing the prohibited degrees of marriage, the people with whom we are not permitted to enter into matrimony, the laws of consanguinity and moral respect for those who are most closely related to us. In essence, the emphasis throughout this portion is on the ways in which we reestablish a close relationship with God and reacquire holiness. In a world today in which our focus is often so far from holiness, so shaped by the daily detail of life and the clacks and call of commercial society, this emphasis on the sacred in our tradition is striking. In the words of the psalm, "Keep yourself from evil, strive to do what is good and right, and seek holiness every day." Outstanding principles to live by, now as then. You know, this Shabbat will also be Shabbat HaGadol, the great Sabbath before Passover. May these ideas become a central part of our own Passover experience this year. Our pre-Passover poetry slam comes from poet Marge Piercy's Passover Seder cycle, the poem Salt Water. It is a bowl of tears on the table into which we dip the parsley, into which we dip the egg. It is a miniature ocean on the table, salt as the sea of reeds through which they were to pass. Not to safety, never safety, but to where they were promised they would, if they chose, be free. It is the salt water of our sweat pressed through our skin as the body labors, for we are bidden not only to rest on the seventh day, but to work on the others. And the brain, too, in its fever of creation, exudes salt. Salt like the sea, salt like our blood. Salt like the waters of the womb, the salt of regret, and the salt of effort. That was Marge Piercy's poem for the Seder table, Salt Water. When we come back, we'll talk with our outstanding guest, Paula Fass, about why she decided to invent children's history. Well, the subject, not the actual history, and what it means for our understanding of the Holocaust. All that in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Passover is coming up fast, so why is this night different from all other nights? Because you can spend it with Rabbi Sam Kohan, enjoying a Seder in a way that makes Passover live and breathe as never before, for every age. And this year, it's part of the 100th anniversary of Temple Emmanuel, which makes this an even more extraordinary night. To truly experience this great festival of freedom, join Rabbi Sam Kohan for a second night Passover Seder that's simply the finest in Southern Arizona. This celebration is on Tuesday night, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Reservations are a must. Call 520-327-4501. The food is great and kosher, but it's the stories, songs, and spirit of Rabbi Kohan that make this a Seder you'll never forget. Learn, enjoy, laugh, cry, and eat well. Call 327-4501 to make your reservation now for Tuesday, April 19th, a memorable second night of Passover with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or, if you live on the northwest side of Tucson, there'll also be a second night Seder in the northwest with Rabbi Jason Holtz. Call 327-4501 for more information.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In an op-ed he published in the Washington Post last week, Richard Goldstone, head of the infamous Goldstone Report that in 2009 accused Israel and Hamas of war crimes, essentially retracted a good share of his support for his own commission's report. In his April 1st essay, No April Fool's Joke This Time, We Hope, Goldstone said that if he had had the cooperation of the Israeli government at the time of the investigation, he would not have concluded that Israel deliberately targeted civilians during the Gaza War. In essence, Goldstone notes that the fact that Hamas did deliberately target Israeli civilians was self-evident, based on the fact that they were firing missiles and rockets purposely and indiscriminately towards population centers in Israel, and with no actual attempt at even attacking the military. the claims that the Goldstone Report made that Israel may have committed crimes against humanity and war crimes was based on the civilian Palestinian deaths that took place during the Gaza campaign, for which the commission had no evidence on which to draw any other reasonable conclusion. In other words, since they weren't given other information by the Israelis, they just assumed civilians killed by Israeli bombs and missiles were deliberately targeted by Israel. Ah, but 2 years later, lo and behold, Richard Goldstein got religion. He has read the reports of the Israeli military investigations, which were still in progress when his own committee's report was rushed out with such fanfare, and they demonstrate that while there were certainly some errors of judgment by Israeli commanders that led to regrettable civilian Arab deaths, there was no attempt by Israel to target Arab civilians. In fact, the opposite was true. The Israeli military tried hard to avoid hitting civilians, and when they accidentally did attack or kill civilians, there was an investigation of the officers and men involved to determine what went wrong and, in appropriate circumstances, to discipline the attackers. Goldstone's post-op-ed also notes that Israel has responded progressively and openly to remedy any errors that can be corrected. Hamas, on the other hand, has done absolutely nothing to stop targeting civilians and perpetrating crimes against humanity. In fact, it continues to send rockets and other missiles towards Israeli children and other civilian targets on a daily basis. Well, it's a kind of al-chait, a minor mea culpa from Goldstone, who has been vilified throughout the Jewish world ever since that report came out. But it comes pretty darn late. 2 years after all the horrible publicity and international condemnation that Israel received from the original report, Richard Goldstone has now sort of retracted some of what he said. While he did this publicly, in America anyway, he has not yet taken any formal steps with the United Nations to change any part of that original report. Let's not get too carried away with this backhanded reversal. All Goldstone has said so far is that Israel seems to be fully investigating most of the civilian deaths in the Gazan conflict, assessing responsibility and determining if any of them were the result of deliberate action, and they are also prosecuting anybody who did so. In other words, Israel, as we would expect, is behaving like a civilized country. But this hardly constitutes a full retraction of the Goldstone report, and it is unlikely to stop or even slow the terrible processes that that report set in motion. Last month, a UN council voted to send the report to the UN General Assembly with a recommendation that the Security Council turn it over to prosecutors at the International Criminal Court in The Hague for possible prosecution of war crimes and crimes against humanity. No doubt the focus there will be on Israel's alleged misdeeds, not Hamas, not the Palestinian Authority. They were pretty roundly criticized in the same report, but nobody cares about that. The question for us pro-Israel types and the organizations is how to stop this process and try to force the United Nations to reverse course. To begin that, Richard Goldstone would have to get everyone on the commission, which has now been disbanded, to sign a retraction request and submit it to the UN. I can tell you that simply won't happen. So it's rather cold comfort to know that Goldstone's report has been semi-retracted. In Africa, Sudan's Foreign Minister Ali Karti blamed, guess, Israel for a bombing attack on a car that killed two people. "This is absolutely an Israeli attack," Ali Karti told reporters in Khartoum. An unidentified plane reportedly flew into Sudanese airspace from the Red Sea, bombed the car, killing its passengers, before flying back the way it came. The plane evaded several missiles fired by the Sudanese army. Well, I guess they weren't starving Darfurians. They could get away. One of the car's passengers was identified by Karti as a Sudanese citizen whom he said had no government or Islamist ties. Now, the other one he didn't mention. Karti says Israel carried out the attack to prevent Sudan from being removed from a U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. It's not clear how he came to that dubious piece of logic. In any case, Sudan is currently under consideration to be removed from the list of state sponsors of terrorism, although it has a long and rich history of sponsoring terrorism and serving as a corrupt conduit for weaponry and terrorists to the Middle East and elsewhere. Neither Israel's foreign ministry nor its military has commented. Israel was accused in 2009 of a deadly strike on a convoy of trucks in eastern Sudan, suspected of smuggling arms and transporting weapons bound for Gaza. In other news, shortly after Rabbi Rick Jacobs was chosen to head the Union for Reform Judaism, Rabbi Stephen Fuchs has been named president of the World Union for Progressive Judaism. Fuchs has served for 40 years as a pulpit rabbi, including senior rabbi of Congregation Beth Israel in West Hartford, Connecticut. He is the past chair of the Central Conference of American Rabbis Committee on Interreligious Affairs and is known for his work in Jewish-Christian relations and social justice. Fuchs will assume the presidency this July. He plans to divide his time between North America and Israel. To work for Klal Yisrael, to advance progressive Jewish life in Israel and around the world, is the opportunity for which I have been preparing my entire life, Fuchs said. Mike Grabiner, WUPJ's chairman, called Fuchs a visionary leader. The World Union is the international umbrella organization of about 1,200 reform, liberal, progressive, and reconstructionist congregations in some 44 countries. But since the retirement of Rabbi Richard Hirsch, now its honorary president for life, the WUPJ has struggled to find a successful new long-term leader. Rabbis Rick Block and Uri Regev have led the World Union without establishing themselves as permanent successors. We wish Rabbi Fuchs bracha v'atzlacha, blessing and success. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Paula Fass. She's the Margaret Byrne Professor of History at UC Berkeley, Distinguished Scholar in Residence at Rutgers University in New Brunswick. She earned her bachelor's, master's, and PhD degrees from respectively Barnard College of Columbia University and Columbia University itself. In 2008, she got an honorary PhD from Linköping University in Sweden, which I have to ask you about. I know you were there as a guest lecturer, but must have been kind of neat to get the honorary PhD.
It was fantastic, actually. We think of the Swedes as very informal people, but in fact, they also have a tremendously formal side. And this formality comes out in the conferring of these honorary degrees. You're required to wear evening clothes, and if you're a man, you have to wear, a black tie. It's done in Latin and in Swedish. They were very kind to me. I was the only American scholar to receive an honorary degree, and they said two sentences in English so that I could understand. But my husband, of course, was sitting in the audience, and so it, for me, sitting up at least on the dais, I had some involvement. But he was there being inundated with Swedish and Latin. It was still an extraordinary experience, one that I'll never forget.
Your most recent book, we talked about a little earlier today, Inheriting the Holocaust, a Second-Generation Memoir, talks about, in some ways, not so much the loss of children, but the loss of children and the loss of parents. 2 million children is the statistic we hear about that died in the Holocaust. That number sort of overwhelms.
Exactly. It's one of the reasons I wrote this book. I really felt that we live in a quantitative age, and the biggest, baddest number is the 6 million or 2 million children, but that doesn't have a whole lot of meaning to people. What means things to people, I think, is understanding the particulars, coming to grips with a specific family and the specific losses of children, and how that affects those who remain, and how we have to provide very clear pictures and real names to those who were lost. My family was a very ordinary family that came out of Lodz, Poland. Both sides, both my father's side and my mother's side, even though they would, as I like to tell people, they would not have known each other. They came from such distinct social backgrounds, even in that one city. But they were ordinary nevertheless. They were not intellectuals, they were not political figures, and they would have been forgotten. And that's the thing that I think is incumbent on us, not to forget the individuals. The number is huge. It's too large for us to really grapple with. But individual families and individual lives and individual children, those are the things that we can understand. And that's why I wrote this book.
What, as a historian of children, how can you explain to people the difference between being a social historian and a sociologist?
Oh, listen, I've had a hard time doing that all my career.
I never said it was going to be, Schwerzes einer Yid. I never said it was going to be easy here.
Well, it's not even a question of easy. I suppose the difference can be put this way. Sociologists are really interested in patterns that repeat themselves and in aggregates. Now, as a social historian, I'm interested in the aggregate too, but I also believe in contingency. I believe that things don't necessarily repeat in the same fashion, even if you have all of the structural elements there together. History has unexpected qualities. And I suppose that's how I would put it. Not only that the historian is interested in the deep past, and most sociologists think of the past as kind of the 1950s, whereas we go all the way back, as far back as we possibly can, but also because historians take the process of time itself into account. And the fact that time leads in has unexpected qualities.
You are writing a history of American parent-child relations over the past 200 years. Nice small project.
Yeah, really.
What general trends have you seen in the changes that have taken place? I mean, it seems to me that we don't parent in any way the way our people did 200 years ago, but maybe that's wrong.
No, you're correct to start with, but I think there are a lot of things. I wish we had a lot more time for me to even begin, but let me begin by suggesting that in the United States specifically, parents did not try to exercise as much control over their children 100 years ago as they do today, and that may be surprising to your listeners. Because we imagine that in the past there was more hierarchy, more obligation, more responsibility, more obedience. But in fact, over the last, I'd argue, 30 years, parents have been really effectively trying to undermine the autonomy of their children by controlling their lives. It's a result of fear and the desire to prevent all kinds of risks. But in the early republic, in the early 19th century in the United States, risk was precisely what made this country possible. There were all kinds of risks of trying out a new continent, of engaging in new industrial activities. And children were very much at the forefront of that. Children were deeply involved in all kinds of things, especially the work of the continent. Today, we try to protect our children so much that in some ways we make it more difficult for them rather than less difficult. Part of it has to do with schooling itself. Schooling is a way to prepare for experience, but of course it delays experience. And over the recent past, we've been delaying it and delaying it and delaying it to such a degree that our children really don't have, they're sequestered in school for a very long time. And so the ability to experience things, to create innovations, even as young people, certainly as young adults, is further and further delayed.
I was just thinking about my grandfather came over in steerage at the age of 13 alone from Russia.
Exactly.
At the age of 13, I was allowed to take public buses all the way across Los Angeles to go to school. I don't let my 13-year-old, now he's 14, walk to school because it might be too dangerous.
You've got it in a capsule through those three generations. Exactly correct.
I want to thank Paula Fass for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Her latest book is called Inheriting the Holocaust, a second-generation memoir, which is available, as they like to say, wherever books are sold, which is pretty much nowadays just online. Speaking of changes in our society. And she has, of course, a remarkable knowledge. And is there other stuff that they can find? Is there a website that they can go to find out more about your work?
I have a website, and it lists, it's paulafass.com, and they can go to the University of California at Berkeley website as well. I have published quite a number of books, including books about immigration, books about youth culture, as well as my kidnapped book and others that your listeners might be interested in.
Paula, thank you so much for a great visit, and continued success with everything.
Thank you, and it's been my pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Join in a fabulous Mimuna Moroccan festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. This year, we've added a fantastic drumming circle and the chance to learn how to belly dance, too. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of delicious and exotic non-Passover treats. Join Israeli Moroccan star Aznet and Rabbi Sam Kohan for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mimuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mimuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend for free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mimuna Festival and Concert, Tuesday, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Richard Michelson, author of the delightful kids' book Lippman Pike, America's First Home Run King. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Passover preview of Pesachdik music. It's from the Western Winds, Vehi She'amda, for us and our ancestors in every generation. Others have risen up to enslave us, but God has saved us and brought us freedom. Just 8 more shopping, cleaning, and cooking days till Pesach. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Cello e cor bilvad, madoleno le calzenu. Cello e cor bilvad. The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.